And we're live. Sean Riggins, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, man, thanks for stopping by. Man, you have a really interesting story, and that's what I kind of want to dive into first before we talk about maybe your approach and some tips and tricks. I was doing some research online and I read that you were kind of a late bloomer coming out of high school. You were almost kind of like Springer in that you were a smaller guy. You were like 5'7", 5'8". Did I read that right? Coming out of high school?
Yeah, I graduated high school. I was probably on a good day with a thick sole pair of shoes, probably 5'7", 5'8".
Right.
I mean, maybe 145, 150 pounds. And then after my senior year is when I actually put on a little bit of size and started to grow a little bit. But
Right.
no, that is spot on.
Right, yeah, I feel like that's we have a lot of players and a lot of parents who kind of share that same sentiment. They think that they're worried. They're kind of they're worried because maybe the kid's small, the kid hasn't grown yet, he hasn't filled out his body, he hasn't filled out the uniform, and so they kind of lack that perspective that the kid still has chance ch time to develop. And so
No, that's
Spring
that
talks about that too.
it's true. Nowadays too, there's so much that goes into, these kids that commit early and the pressure that's on these kids all the time, with all these perfect game tournaments and all this summer ball. So, not everybody's gonna develop at the same rate. And to me, it's absolutely ridiculous that these kids are getting classified and labeled when they're a freshman in high school on
Right.
what their potential is. Not, and like I said, not everybody develops at the same pace. So for somebody to say that a kid doesn't have ability and they're a freshman in high school or sophomore or whatever the case may be, is to me it's crazy.
Yeah.
Because a kid, kids get stronger faster every single year. And, it's just how, the cookie crumbles. Some guys do develop later, but it's tough because nowadays, like I said, so many people are committing at such an early age and, the pressure that's on these kids and the competition that's out there is tough, and everybody wants to see the kids go to Division One school. And, you can't get caught up in that. I know it's much easier said than done. But so many people are caught up into those big name Division One schools and getting their kid over to one of them, or just let time do its thing and let the kid have fun. The biggest thing is to have fun,
Yeah.
and the best will turn out for the kid. But to put the pressure on him, and especially if he hasn't grown into his size, if the doctor tells you a kid's gonna be 6 foot, 6 foot 1, and he's only 5'7", 5'8", give it a little bit of time,
Yeah.
and see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you went to St. Thomas Aquinas High School in Fort Lauderdale, is that correct?
Yes,
Is
St.
that
Thomas Aquinas.
okay,
Yes, I do.
and then you graduated.
Yeah, I went to FIU. I actually, when I was a senior, in high school, I never got. Sorry about that. That's my little guy. But at St. Thomas, I never got a single hit. There was a guy in front of me, Scott Masuko, who signed to go to University of Georgia
Okay.
to play baseball and football. He's a solid athlete, real good player, and it just wasn't my time. So after St. Thomas, I called a couple schools, and there was one school, Campbell, that's up in North Carolina, that got back to me, and we were going back and forth, and I was thinking about going there. And then during my summer, the summer going into my freshman year, I started to grow a little bit. And Mark Calvey, who is a longtime pitching coach for FIU, he was the pitching coach for South Carolina when they won all their national championships, and I think now he's at, South Alabama now as a head coach. He came out
Okay.
and saw me and asked me what I thought about trying to walk on at FIU. So, I went down there and I actually didn't even really think about it. I told my dad I was going down there to sign up for classes, and my dad was supportive in whatever I was going to do. And I went down there. I talked to Danny Price, who was their head coach for a long time. Now he's at Miami-Dade College. And I basically walked into his office. He had no clue who I was. And I said that I was there to play baseball. And it was funny. He looked on his roster. He's like, "I don't see your name anywhere on here." I was like, "Yeah, you're not going to see it on here now, but you know, in a couple months you're going to see it on there. And the guy, he was amazed that I even walked in the door. He's like, I've never seen anybody or even heard of anybody doing this to a Division I program of this caliber. And about 20 minutes later, he told me that I was an invited walk-on. I couldn't believe it. And wow. So I started school there in the summer, and you know, that year I earned a redshirt spot, which was amazing. And I took off to Indian River, where I actually started to get my first little bit of playing time, and you know, was drafted following that year.
Right. So what? So you didn't get one single hit at St. Thomas.
No, I didn't get a hit. I got 10. I started one game. Mm-hmm. I think it was against maybe like Fort Lauderdale High. Mm-hmm. I think, and I swear, I think it was about halfway through the game. It was like a close game, and it was a game we were supposed to like win, you know, kill them. And I think I had won it bad at the time, and I walked, and then I was taken out, and that was it. That was my only start. But no, I never recorded one hit at the varsity level. I think in the combined 3 years that I was on varsity, I had 10 at bats.
So what do you think what was it that was kind of that driving force? Because I would imagine that most players, most kids in high school who get very little playing time, who don't even get a hit nonetheless, don't have right. that motivation, that drive to continue playing baseball after high school, let alone a Division I program, you know? So what do you think it was that was pushing you?
There's so many things, though, that if you think about that are negative in the game of baseball. If the game is based on failure, number one, can't deal with failure, you're going to have a tough time. You can't deal with people telling you that you need to make an adjustment, constructive criticism, you're going to have a tough time. And up until that point, I really never even played. So I didn't know how good I was. Back then, you didn't have all the summer ball and stuff that you have now. You know, mm-hmm. now you have 10 tons of summer teams, you know, tournaments, all that stuff. We had the Florida Pokers, which are still now up and running, and we had another team, which was Sunrise. It was just like, it was a buddy of mine, Jimmy Regan, his father, who ran the team and the organization. It was a solid team, but, I mean, you either played on Sunrise or you played on the Pokers. Right. And the Pokers was full of all the best players around here. So I just didn't get discouraged, and I always had a good arm. I always had a good arm, and I could put the ball in play. I never really struck out. I always could put the ball in play. Mm-hmm. So, and my arm was strong. I could always throw the ball well. So I just, and once I started to grow, and then in between that, like I said, that senior year and my freshman year of college, the day that Mark Calvey came out to see me play and to watch our team, I hit a home run, the first home run that I've ever hit over the fence, to dead center field. And that was pretty much the turning point of my career, when I finally got some wind on, you know, in my sail, and I was like, wow, you know, I feel that I have something going here. Right. And he worked on with me, my catching a little bit, and my catching really started to improve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just when I got over to FIU, it was solid structure. You know, you had the weight program, all the workouts, all the training, you know. And, you know, that was my first opportunity. Danny Price gave me an opportunity over there, and I just couldn't stay. The following year, I came out my redshirt freshman year, and the speed of the game was just, it was too much for me, you know.
Right.
It was too much. I was just overmatched in the fall. I really was. So he told me, you know, at the end of the fall, look, if you want, you can stay here. You're going to get about 50 at-bats. You'll be the backup guy. Or you can go to Indian River or Manatee Community College. So I went up to Indian River and met head coach there, Mike Eason, at the time, and hit it off with him real well. And, you know, I went there, and my first year I hit over 400 it was about 8-9 home runs with a bunch of RBIs. And, you know, that was when I got my real chance to play and see what I could do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I took advantage of the opportunity, but right. I could have easily packed it in. You know, you're
sure.
Right. There's so many negatives, you know, that are in my story. You know, people saying, oh, you're never going to do it. You know, and you hear that with everybody, you know, people that, you know, it's easy to pick out a guy who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's not hard, you know. But to stick to somebody who you see who has potential, but, you know, you got to give it time. Everybody nowadays, too, my friend, everybody is so results, you know, they want results immediately. And this is what happens to a lot of kids. You know, they change everything that they're trying to do because a kid doesn't get a hit the first couple of bats, mm-hmm. or he's not playing good the first couple of games. So they try to change the kid's game, and they do that consistently. So then you lose a guy.
Yep.
But I'm here to tell you, you got to stick to your game, stick to what you do good, you know, and have confidence in yourself, because everybody else out there, you know, I'm sorry to say this, if, you know, if some kids didn't think that this was true, but a lot of people don't have confidence in you. And it's just unfortunate, but that's how this game goes.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Okay, so you're at Indian River. You get drafted in the 24th round by the Tampa Bay Rays. So it's your first year pro ball. Prior to getting drafted, did you have a specific moment, a particular moment where you kind of told yourself, hey, you know what, I'm actually good enough to play pro ball? Or was getting drafted kind of like another, not necessarily a surprise, but just a milestone that you didn't really think about?
Yeah, you know, the first day that I felt like, man, I'm, you know, this is a possibility. We were playing Brevard, who is now, I think, Eastern Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And I hit two home runs in the game, threw a couple guys out, and a scout for the Braves, I forget the gentleman's name, was there watching, and I filled out one of their, you know, little questionnaire cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I couldn't even believe it. You know, I was just amazed, pretty much, you know, to say the least. And then as that season continued, I probably filled one out for every team that there was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, the people that I had around me at the time, you know, thought I had a good opportunity, good chance to get drafted and all that stuff. Went mm-hmm. to some pre-draft workouts. And, you know, it's funny, though, on the actual draft day, my team at Indian River, the guys, they would, every single year, they would call up. They would pretend that they were scouts. So they would call guys up on the team and tell them that they were drafted.
Oh, that's so messed up, man.
Yeah. So I was sitting there, and the day that they called, I was sitting in my room, laying on my bed, and the house phone rang, and it was this gentleman by the name of Kevin Alfarini, still a scout for the Rays, and he was like, "Yeah, we wanted to let you know you've been drafted in the 24th round." And I thought it was the guys on the team, so I was like, "Man, you're not getting me on this. We had already talked about this, you know. There's no." And I was one of the biggest jokers out there, so I'm like, "You guys are full of it, you know." So I'm like, so I hang up the phone, and the guy calls me right back. He's like, "No, don't hang up. I'm telling you, this is the real deal." So we got laughing about that, and you know, I ended up back then. We had the draft and follow was still in order. So then I went back to school for my sophomore year and then signed just before the draft then. But it was a pretty good story. And, no, I never, you know, I didn't think about playing pro ball. You know, every kid, when you're growing up, your dream is always playing the major league. So, you know, that's how I thought about it. It was a dream, you know. And it came true. And, you know, that's you just got to stick to it, really. I mean, my story is very, very unique. You know, doubt that you'll hear of anybody who didn't play on their high school team making it to the major league. Not nowadays, you know. But you know, it can happen. There's been crazier things happen.
No, for sure. Yeah.
You know, it was baseball. Baseball was great to me and my family.
Right. Yeah. For sure. And then you started off pretty hot, right? Your rookie season, you hit .345, 8 home runs, 15 games. What would you say was the biggest adjustment you had to make when you started your professional career?
No, when you get out there on the professional field, the adjustments that you make, you know, you have the travel, you have, you know, a game every single day. You have a bunch of other guys, you know, that you're with more than your family. You know, that's more the adjustment than the playing. We were fortunate at Indian River. We played 100-plus game season, you know, from the fall and spring. So that part wasn't so bad. But, you know, the bus trips.
Right.
And the Appalachian League, where I was my first year, you know, some of the fields that you play on, the lighting, you know, that's more the adjustment. And to me, it's being around your teammates, you know, every single day, all day long, mm-hmm. in close quarters, and, you know, mm-hmm. trying not to step on anybody's toes, you know, being respectful to guys, and just, you know, being a good teammate. You know, that to me is the toughest adjustment, because if you can play, you're going to play good, you know, and that's just how it boils down to. If you can play, you're going to play good, you know, getting along with your teammates and things of that nature, to me, are much, much harder than the baseball part.
Yeah, definitely. So you eventually make it to the show.
Right.
Your skip is Joe Madden. So you're kind of, mm-hmm. I'm looking at this, you're essentially part of the team is kind of like the team that Dan Jennings built, or kind of helped build. You had players like Aubrey Huff, Carl Crawford, Johnny Gomes, Rocco Baldelli. Did you have any memories with those guys?
Oh, yeah, great memories with all those guys. I tell you, we had such a good group of guys. I mean, we were close. Everybody was close. You know, it was, I swear, our team in the big leagues hung out. More guys probably hung out on that team than any other team that I was on. It was amazing, because you really don't see that in the big leagues. You have guys with families and just older guys, younger guys. But, you know, we had a solid group. And when I say older guys on our team, you know, we had guys like Aubrey Huff that were like 27, 28. You had, in 2008, we were lucky we had Troy Percival, which was,
oh yeah,
that guy was, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic. You know, I got along with him great. But, you know, you had your couple older guys mixed in with the younger group. And, you know, the younger group, though, we had played together, a lot of us, BJ, Delman, Carl, you know, even some of the pitchers, Shield, Edwin Jackson, mm-hmm. a bunch of these guys, you know, we had played together coming through the minor leagues. So, you know, we knew each other, and, you know, we knew everybody had talent. But, you know, and it was cool for everybody to get up to the big leagues kind of at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were a tight-knit group, and we, like I said, we had been together for a while, and man, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. You know, we had a good run there after losing, you know, 100 plus games every single year.
Can you kind of let's go ahead and kind of walk us through your approach, and we'll start off with your first at bat in the big leagues. What was going through your mind?
My first at bat, it was funny. We were playing the Minnesota Twins, and Rocco Baldelli was coming up to lead off the ninth, bottom of the ninth, and Rocco went over to Joe and was like, "Hey, just give Riggo my at bat." So, and I was sitting down on the end of the bench, and I had all of about 2 seconds to grab my stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, all that was going through my mind, I told myself I was swinging at the first pitch no matter what. And Matty Gurriere was out on the mound. He was like a cutter guy, cutter, sinker, and slider, curveball. I can't really remember, you know, mid-90s guy, hard fastball. And I had already sold out 100% that I was swinging at the first pitch that he threw. And the first pitch I fouled it straight back. It was a little bit up.
Uh-huh.
And then the second pitch, he left it out over the plate a little bit, and I kind of got it off the end, but I got enough of it to sneak it in there. And I tell you, it was got the feeling that I had. My buddy was playing left field, and it dropped over in front of him. And in my head, I'm like, man, did he do that on purpose? But it was great. You know, it was, you know, just all the hard work and stuff that you put in, you know, and to go up there and get a hit on my first at bat with my family there,
mm-hmm.
and my wife there, and, you know, a couple of my buddies, it was amazing. You know, you couldn't write up a better story, and, you know, it's what you dream of, you know,
right.
But I'll tell you, there was nothing going through my head in that at bat except just get up there and swing at the first thing you see, and my adrenaline was pumping so much. I think I was shaking, to be honest with you. But
right.
Yeah, it was great, and to do it there at home, you know, like I said, in front of my friends and family, it was awesome.
Yeah. So let's talk about approach. Let's say you're working with the kid, mm-hmm. okay? because I know you work with players. You know, a kid with plenty of potential. What are some things? Like, what's your framework to having good quality at bats? What are some things that a kid needs to keep in mind? Feel free to talk mechanics. Feel free to talk approach. Feel free to talk about the mental approach or mentality in general. I'd be curious to hear what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I do, I like to keep things very, very simple. You know, sometimes people get with these kids and they talk in terminology and things that baffle me. Not saying that I know everything by any means, but I'd like to keep baseball elementary. It's a very, very hard thing to do already. So if you can keep it elementary and the kid can understand it like you do, to me, you're making headway. So my main thing with the kids, you know, it doesn't matter age, skill set, wherever they're at. You know, first couple of days, you know, they come out, take a look at them, you know, see what they do, do a little tee work, some front toss, a little live batting practice. And then my biggest thing with the kids is making sure that their swing matches their approach. And what I mean by that is I'll ask the kid, hey, what's your approach? You know, if the kid is under 12, 13 years old, I'm going to be honest, they don't have one. But all they'll do, you'll ask them that and they start to smile. And so I know right
See about
then
hit
there
ball.
that they don't have one, which
Yeah.
is okay. You know, majority of the time when they're younger, they're only throwing fastballs most of the time. They're throwing maybe a changeup, so they're just seeing the ball and hitting the ball. And once you start to get into what an approach is, and my approach for everybody, it's the same thing because it's something that you can repeat. My approach is very simple. It's you're looking for a fastball down the middle of the plate, and I'm trying to hit the ball right back up the middle. And you never come off of that, whether it's no strikes, one strike, two strikes, whatever the case may be, that's your approach because that's something that you don't have to think about it. You can embed that in your head. And if I'm looking for a fastball down the middle, I can adjust in, I can adjust away, and I can adjust to the off-speed stuff. So, and if I'm staying back up the middle, that's going to keep me on the ball. You know, it's going to keep my, I talk about keeping the barrel in the zone as long as possible to give myself the most chance. Now, is there all this information about all this launch angle? That stuff to me comes into play once the kid is consistent and he can repeat a swing over and over and over again on any type of pitch, in any type of location. If the kid can do that, okay, now let's take, if you want, we can hook one of those little machines up and see what your launch angle is, all your time to the ball, all this stuff. Yeah, that's all great. But until you have the basic mechanics down, that stuff to me is absolutely pointless. And now I see so many of these young kids. They come out their first couple of times, and I throw them whatever 30, 40 balls, and they hit 25, 30 pop-ups, and it's amazing because you know go watch on the internet any given day, and you see these kids hit these pop-ups at their pop-ups, and some of the kids I ask them, I say, hey, you know, how many home runs did you hit last year? And I already know the answer. It's going to be none, if any, maybe a couple. But everybody is now consumed with this launch angle and swinging up on the ball. And, you know, there's so many other things that I feel are tarnishing these young guys that it's making it much more difficult for them, you know. And I tell guys all the time, I say, if you have true power, you can hit the ball out of the park on the line, you know. But be yourself. You know, if you're a guy that can run and you're sitting there and the 6 out of 10 outs that you made are balls in the air, that's not productive for you. You know,
No,
be
yeah.
who you are, be the best that you can be. And you know what? There's guys that start off in the big leagues even that hit 4 and 5 home runs their first couple years. And then they develop and, you know, they'll start hitting 20, 30 home runs. But the game, I understand it's about scoring runs, RBIs, and all that stuff, but teams want somebody who can be themselves day in, day out. It doesn't matter the situation, time, who's on the mound. Who they want a guy, and they want to know who they have. Be yourself and be able to do that every single day, And that's really what I pound into my guys. If you're a guy that can run, you know, you should be making your outs on the ground or on a line. If you're a guy who's got some power, you know, you hit the ball over the fence, you know, try to hit it over the fence on a line. You know, keep it out of the air. And like I said, you know, the doubles and home runs, all that looks great. But if you're hitting 200, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So, you know, become a good hitter. And like I said, I my biggest thing is if, you know, I like seeing the approach match the swing. And that's much easier said than done. And, you know, we do that with consistent reps. And, you know, I talk to the kids. I like to hear their thoughts. But and another thing I like to do is I like to make sure that the kid gets repetitions. I see so many guys out there today that do lessons and work with these young kids that try to justify their value as a coach by talking about things that are, to me, irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they need
if
reps.
You have confidence in yourself, you don't need to justify your value by sitting there and talking the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, give the kid something to think about, give him something to do, and then go and do it.
Yeah.
Let him do it. Don't micromanage the whole time. I mean, if you're talking 30, 40 minutes out of an hour, you know, hitting session, there's an issue. You know, not everybody's at the same stage. That's understandable, but the kid needs to hit. Let him hit it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I
and they're going to have to go through bumps and bruises. This is not easy, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I that's what I always say too. I say repetition is key. You've got to put in the hours. So how do you incorporate repetition to get a kid to understand, I'm going to look for a ball down the middle, I'm going to try to drive it right back up the middle? Is there a specific hitting drill that you do, or is it just a bucket of balls, T-work, and say, hey, kid, I want you to take this ball and drive it up the middle?
You know, there's a few things that we do. One thing that really helped me out a lot when I was younger was our hitting coach with the Indian River. He was our head coach also. When we were doing front toss and stuff, he always told us, you know, hit the ball off the L screen. It doesn't matter where it's pitched. Try hitting the ball off the L screen. It's going to keep you through the ball, and it's going to get you with your swing with the mindset that you're thinking going back up the middle. It's going to keep that bat in the zone for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one thing that I incorporate. Another thing that we do, you know, a lot of the guys nowadays were trying to get all that lift on the ball. Their hands get away from their body in a weak position.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Robinson Cano was big on the drill where he puts the net right next to the tee. That's another thing that I like to do a lot.
Okay.
And with most of the young hitters also, I'm real big, especially if they're, you know, if they're younger guys, on making sure that they have separation in their swing, that when they get their foot down, that they got a little bit of weight on the backside, whether, you know, they're 70, 30, 60, 40, however you want to talk about it.
Right.
It's just so that they're in a strong position.
Yeah.
You know, before they start their swing. So many guys, before they swing, they got, you know, 70% of their weight out on their front foot. And I don't care how strong you are, it's going to be tough to hit, and you're not going to be able to adjust to breaking balls.
No, yeah.
You know?
For sure, yeah.
So, that's another thing we do. I'm real big on breaking it down. If it's two-part, it's two-part, you know, so the kid gets the idea of, hey, you know, I got to get back. I got to, when my front foot lands, I got to have a little bit of weight on the backside before I make my move to the ball. Another drill that I like to do, too, that really helps with making sure that you have a little bit of separation, we do the drill where you put up two tees,
okay,
set up one ball inside, one ball outside. And when the kid starts his load is when you tell him, you know, in or out, and they, you know, hit that ball off the tee. That's one drill to me because it puts the mind, it adds the mind too, which is nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, and another thing I'd like to do with majority of the kids, we hit a lot of live batting practice. You know, you can do a lot of things off a tee and with front toss.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once you get that ball coming, and we also, you know, I throw it to the kids, and I like to get that machine cranked up too, and put some velocity on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of kids nowadays, you know, I don't like to hit off the machine. Like, why don't you like to hit off the machine? I guarantee you, I'll tell you, because it's hard for me to time it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the timing in the game is not going to be the same also. So we work through that, and the kids get super furious at me, which is okay. But after a little while, you know, once they start to get the hang of it, it really, really helps them out. There's no other way to see velocity like that. I can't throw the ball 100 miles an hour at these kids all day long, and I sure as heck can't break off curveballs. So we hit curveballs off the machine so they can see spin. You know, and there's different things that you can do. And with different kids, you know, certain kids are different. You gotta construct a plan that's a little different for each guy. You know, some guys, you know, need a little bit more work with the mental aspect than the swing. Or,
sure.
You know, some guys swing is, you know, they need a little bit of tightening up on the swing. But, you know, to me, I always tell everybody also, I make suggestions. I don't like to, you know, say there's only one way to do it because that's not true. You know, I give suggestions. This is what I see. You know, I love feedback from the kids. The kids, they teach me new stuff every single day. They really do. And, you know, I learn from them, you know, and I continue to learn. And that's one thing about myself is I'm open to new things. And I think that really, really helps me with the kids because, you know, there's different ways to do it, like I said.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Is there anything that you kind of changed your mind about while working with these kids, training with these kids? Was there something that you thought was kind of what you thought was true, and that you kind of flip flopped, but say, oh, you know what, maybe that wasn't as true. You know, I'm starting to look at it in a different way now. Has there been anything like that within the past few years or so?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, that's funny you asked that because this year I've been. Working with one guy, he's with the Colorado Rockies now. His name is Christian Correa. He's a local kid who went to school down here, and now he's with the Rockies. And he was telling me, because I would tell him, hey, Christian, you know, to me it looks like you're in the zone and out of the zone a little bit too quick. You know, I'd like to see your barrel in the zone a little bit longer. You know, what do you think about that'll help you do that? And he told me, he goes, Riggs, I think about trying to match the plane of the ball. And I sat there and I was thinking about that. I'm like, okay, well, the ball is, no matter what, the gravity is taking the ball down. I don't care what anybody says. Even 100 miles an hour, it's still, the ball's going down.
Mm-hmm.
So he was telling me to think about matching the plane of the ball. And I was always a guy, I like to think about, you know, staying through the ball, staying level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even for me, I would think even sometimes down because I had an issue with collapsing my backside a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be swinging uphill. And mm-hmm. I started to think about that, and I'm like, man, match the plane of the ball. And before, I wasn't really sold on that. It was something that I'd given thought to, but I wasn't 100% sold on it. And then he talked to me about it and gave me a little bit of information that he got from a couple of his coaches. And I was like, man, you know, I really saw the light with that. And that makes sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now, as a matter of fact, I hear people talk about it on TV and stuff like that. So the matching the plane of the ball is, you know, something that, like I said, I really wasn't sold on it that much. And mm-hmm. now, you know, I like it. I like it a lot. I tell some of the young kids because that might be something that works for them rather than, hey, stay through the ball, you know, match the same plane as the ball. And then they're like, oh, okay. They start to understand it. You know, whatever clicks for a kid, too. You know, you can tell a little guy the same thing 30 different ways and see which one he holds on to.
Right.
So it's nice. You know, it's another option of being able to explain something.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that, and I've actually spoke with kids and you know, I've talked with kids about that, too. So I think I remember Donaldson even talking about that when he was talking about his approach on TV. But yeah, that's
yeah, with that real good one with Mark DeRosa.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, I think that he's
Okay. Well,
that was
Sean, man, I want to respect you of your time. I just got a couple of questions, and I'll get you out of here. You know, one of the things that we get asked a lot, especially with a lot of our high school guys that are getting ready to play college baseball, is what are some adjustments or things that a player can keep in mind when he's starting to see 90 plus for the first time on a daily basis? You know, for me, I kind of felt like 88 to 91 really wasn't a big adjustment, but for some reason, when you got to 92 to 93, it changed. What are some things that maybe a hitter needs to keep in mind, or some drills or approaches that they need to think about to make that adjustment to hitting higher velocity fastballs on a daily basis?
the best thing that I can tell you for that is two things. George Hendrick was our first base coach with the Rays, and sometimes I would be sitting for an extended period of time, when I was backup, and I would always, we called George, cuz, I would say, cuz, you know, what do you have for me on these guys that throw in mid upper 90s? And he goes, Riggs, you gotta get the ball down in the zone. Uh-huh. He's like, if you have a belt high fastball, that's 95. If it's a little above that, it's 96, and you know, up, and it just keeps on climbing the velo. And I think what they call it now is effective velocity, uh-huh. as a matter of fact. Okay. But that same 95 that's at the belt, and you bring that down a little bit lower, that same 95 is now 92, 93. You right. have a little bit more time. So these guys that are bringing it 95 plus, you know, 93, you've got to get the ball down in the zone. You have to. It takes a special hitter for you to be able to get all up on those fastballs that are 95 plus that are up in the zone. And, you know, not saying that you can't do it, but, and some, you know, certain guys can do it and they make it look easy. But to me, the best advice that I can give, you know, younger players is bring that ball down in the zone. You know, the mm-hmm. high pitch looks great because it's closer to your eyes. But if you can take that guy who's throwing hard and get him down in the zone, you're going to give yourself a much better chance. And do not come off your approach. You know, what happens is a lot of guys that are throwing harder, all of a sudden now they're thinking swing harder. Mm-hmm. Not swing harder. Just for me, it's get the ball down in the zone and, you know, stay consistent with your approach. Don't try to pull them because, you know, someone throwing that hard and they work you on the outer half, you're never going to get to it. Right. Guys don't want to give up the home run ball. So even if the guy's throwing hard, they're still pitching you outside. Right. Yeah, they still, majority of the guys, they pitch out. They don't want to pitch in because they're, you know, they don't want to give up a home run. Mm-hmm. So, you know, stay with your approach. But like I said, try to get the ball down in the zone if you can. Right.
Okay. So a hitter's hitting is facing a higher velocity guy. Look for something down in the zone, mm-hmm. but we're still trying to drive the ball back up the middle. Nothing changes with the approach.
Yes, no
really,
doubt.
Really,
awesome. No doubt.
Okay, I got two more questions for you, and then we'll be done. Next question: who is a guy that you love watching play on TV right now on a daily basis? Who's a guy that you enjoy watching the most?
God, you know, I love watching Yadier Molina. The guy's, you know, he's such a professional. He catches every single day. You know, I was a catcher myself. You know, he can hit, he can catch. The guy's, you know, an amazing teammate.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides catcher, I like watching Mike Trout. He's, uh-huh. That guy's impressive every single day. He can really do some things on a baseball field. And I really enjoy watching him play. He hits the best pitching, you know.
He does, yeah.
He's out there. Yeah, he plays all the time too, and I know the value in that.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Okay, last question, Sean. What's your definition of success for a ball player?
I would say that, you know, that comes from within. That's, you know, not everybody is gonna make it to the big leagues, but if you put the time in, you put the effort in, and you set some goals for yourself, and you get out there and you practice, you know, success is going to be different for everybody. You know, right. It's like I said, not everybody's going to make it to the big leagues, but for you to get out there every single day and to stick with it and, you know, not give up, to me, that's success. Because like I said before, it's very, very easy to give up and just not reach your goal, you know, with people telling you that you're not going to do it. So, you know, just stick to it. You know, stick to it and just be yourself. Don't be somebody that, you know, that changes their approach and changes the things that they're doing in the game because that's what somebody else wants you to do.
Right.
Be confident in yourself. You know, it's much, much easier said than done.
Awesome. Sean, thank you so much, man. This was great.
No problem, my friend. Thank you guys for having me.